Hello everybody and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness. You join us for this episode. It's the next part of our serialization of the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy. And once again for this series I have our resident shaman with us, Heather Heaton.
Hello Ant, nice to be with you again.
It's good to have you here again for the next installment of the wonderful teachings of the Celestine Prophecies. And today we are going to tackle the fifth and sixth insight, I believe, Heather.
Tackle is the word.
The optimum word, is it?
Tackle, yes. Interestingly enough, when you look into the fifth insight,
yeah,
there's several areas of subject all colliding.
Mm.
And so I've tried to go through it to bring all of the subjects in a coherent way and in a logical way to the table, shall I say, for explaining on this show. And it's been one of the most difficult things I've done for a long time, I have to say. So, folks, I'm been struggling. We are going to, I hope, with the help of Ant, we are, aren't we, Ant, going to go through these areas of subjects, I hope, in the proper sequential way for the fifth insight, because it's a very important insight.
Mm.
And so I've been very anxious about expressing it incorrectly. Hopefully we will go through it so it makes sense to everybody that's listening. But I do beg everybody listening, should they be interested, not sure of how we're explaining it, or it fires up more interest for them, please go to the book. Go and find yourself a book. Go onto Amazon. I'm sure that there's plenty of used ones if the people don't want to purchase brand new, actually on Amazon. Do go and get them, because you will be able to study each one of these chapters or each one of these insights for yourself. But there is a lot in this one to take in.
But I believe, first of all, you've got a little bit of a précis of those that have preceded the insights before, because obviously it gives our listeners a bit of a bit of context as we approach the fifth and sixth. Is that right?
Yeah, I will. I'm going to just read through, just in a nutshell, each one of the ones we've been to so far. I'm going to also read in a nutshell the fifth and the sixth.
Okay, thank you.
The fifth we're going to start off with in a minute. But it does give the coherence, I think, more of the subject from one till six.
Yeah.
So I'm quickly going to go through that first. Number one insight is called a critical mass, and it means getting to a crucial turning point in human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Number two insight, the longer now, the threshold of this present stage of human evolution being slowly beginning slowly many centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's something that people don't fully understand, or is it? It began many centuries ago. The third insight is a matter of energy. For the evolution to take place en masse, it is important for individuals to become aware of energy vibrations beyond the third dimension, which we've been very used to, all of us, in our present lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Number four insight, the struggle for power. The success of the evolution will also depend upon how people, communities, nations, sorry, that was badly said, that how people and communities and nations communicate with each other.
Mm.
Okay, number fifth insight, which we're going to try to do in detail in a minute, is called the message of the mystics. It explains a particular divine experience many mystics from ancient eras have described. And then we hopefully will go on to number six insight, which is called clearing the past. It's about how we release and heal old baggage and wounds and resonate on a higher vibration therefore.
Mm.
Okay. How does that sound so far, Ant?
It sounds grand.
Good.
I hope you're no longer cursing me for agreeing to become involved in the in the teachings of the Celestine.
I think it's a very, very vital knowledge to learn from, and it's been developed in a absolutely phenomenal way by the author. I think it's worthy of everybody reading, because everybody will gain a fantastic insight to themselves and their lives that they hadn't realised before at some point in the book, without doubt. So I thank you for us to put it across. It's not the easiest thing.
That's a relief.
But it was, you know, we'll admit at this point, folk, that it was Ant's idea, so he takes all the blame.
I take it on the chin.
Yes.
Directly.
For all of this. But, you know, having said that, as I said, it's a very worthy thing to talk about and to describe, and to hope that people take a big interest in it.
Right, so we're gonna begin to explore the fifth insight now, then, I believe.
Well, not quite. Can I just go for giving these insights a picture in a different way? I'm going to start off to state, if the listeners think of it this way, we all know the saying now that is, where attention goes, energy flows. Mm-hmm. Well, that is what the third insight's all about. Okay, I also want to therefore go on and give this picture of a mystical experience enables you to briefly see for yourself the truth of the greater existence beyond the limitations of our skin, our material lives, and our struggle for survival. Mm. Well, that's to do with the fifth insight. Mm. Then I'll go on to say to you that in order to get that truth and finding the proof for yourself, rather than just take somebody's word for it, it's necessary to first open up to the notion of the coincidences being synchronistic messages that can be live our lives by or be guided by. And that is also in the first insight. Then there is a need to relinquish a control over everyday life, recognizing that behavior is steeped in fear. That behavior is steeped in fear. Our control is a fear. And that is in the second insight. Next is seeing, experiencing energy, and that is a universal thing, which responds to how we think and feel, which is quantum physics. Mm. As we know, what you think and feel affects atom particles, and that's in the third insight. Mm. So, you know, it isn't something that's distance over there. It's something that we're all learning about now. But you get much, much more insight and information through the Celestine Prophecies, nine insights and more. That we have yet to learn to draw high vibrational energy, that to own the fact that we compete for energy is really important. We all do it. The Celestine Prophecy storyline explains it in detail, and if you read it in detail openly, you'll see that you do compete for energy from other people,
albeit unconsciously.
And that we need to own the fact that we compete from each other, person to person, community to community, and nation to nation. Even nations do it, hence wars.
I believe in the book, it says that's the basis of wars between nations.
Absolutely. That's in the fourth insight. But that when we learn to absorb, draw energy from nature and the universe around us, we will be stepping up as a high vibrational species. This in turn will affect everything around us. And that's the fifth insight. So I hope that gives a clearer picture to everybody listening.
Thank you for that.
Because it does take something to get to that, I have to say. The message of the mystics is number five. What is the message of the mystics? The message of the mystics, it really explains that from ancient tombs of writing and ancient mythology, legend, you name it. We have heard that there are certain people that have had this phenomenal experience where they felt that they've met God or been part of the whole of existence.
Expanded awareness. And
yes. And some people call that illumination, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. Expanded awareness.
Not a drug high.
No. No. Definitely not.
Not even your favourite ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca. A lot of people swear by having such insights, shall we say, through such things as ayahuasca, magic mushrooms, peyote. I mean, there's a whole list that one can go for. But I'm not sure. I would say, personally, that you don't actually get this divine experience.
So you would still advocate the more organic?
I think of anything that you open to your deeper self and your more centered, your central self. So whether that's good or bad experiences, I believe that that's what the psychotropic medicines, shall we call it, can give you. I believe that you can have that connection where you become part of everything in the universe, often by working towards it through going through some sort of religious or mystical system.
Or practices. Yeah.
Practices, you know, there's practices within Buddhism and there's, like you mentioned, Sufism.
Oh yeah, when they're spinning and gyrating and they can enter into altered states of consciousness.
Absolutely, and then there's sort of deprivation of, of food. There's breath control, isn't there? And practices on breath control. There's certain practices in yoga.
You can also, you know, attach electrodes to your head if you want to alter the brainwave pattern, or
even
know, things like gong baths
and I'd be trepanning.
Yeah.
Making a hole in the skull was a practice, wasn't it, once upon
a
time?
Yeah.
It was thought of as being able to go to a more mystical experience. This mystical experience can come through going through a terrorizing experience.
Trauma.
A trauma, which is described in the book, that the hero of the book goes through and experiences absolute terror and fear to the point he just lets go. He completely lets go because he just can't cope with the fear any longer. And he finds himself up a mountain, quite high up, and suddenly everything changes.
Is that where he surrenders almost to death, if you like?
That's it. That's it exactly. He lets go of existence because he can't cope with being locked into that fear any longer, and he just opens to it and
accepts,
and whatever's going to happen next, bring it on, because I just can't do this anymore. Get to that point of absolute crisis, let's go, say bring it on, and suddenly he grows his concept of, he becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and he starts to join, shall we say, the sky. He sees the sun and the moon, and he sees it from above, shall we say, and he begins to feel that he's connecting, and his consciousness is with beyond, out there into the stars and into the universe, the darkness and the cosmos. And he starts to feel it and feel a touch with it. And then he also feels in touch with everything on the planet. So all of nature. And he can't then separate himself from all. He can't separate himself. And he is in pure ecstasy. Total ecstasy. And it's a place he wants to stay forever. It feels like there's nothing else more important ever in existence. The thing about it is he starts to lose it after a while. It starts to come away, especially when he gets back into what's called his emotional fears. And therefore we call it, they're like his emotional dramas, shall we say.
Dare I say it, Heather? Sorry to interrupt.
No, don't, please do.
What you were describing to me, elements of it were what it can feel like to be in love.
Well, close, I think. Mm. I think this is greater than to be in love.
But I'm just, that's partly why the culture, you know, engenders in people this idea of salvation coming through love because of those feelings you experience.
Yeah, they're the highs.
They're so different from the everyday life.
And I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that this is the relate. This is what people can relate to with that type of experience. And it is a high, and we know it's a brain chemical high as well.
To get us to reproduce.
Yes, that's right. But that's why I believe that we can relate to that type of love, but this seems to be beyond that type of love. That type of love, because I think when we are having that experience of love, it's something we want for ourselves.
And it's, I mean, of course, the principle of the teachings is to evolve from this idea of, and again, it's related to the previous, one of the previous insights in terms of the battle for energy, where, you know, love tends to be where we're firing lots of energy into our partner and our partner's firing lots of wonderful, juicy energy into us. And the principles of the Celestine teachings, as I see it, is we need to engender or create that within ourselves by connecting to the higher source. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I feel that this is not a release.
No.
And I think that, but if you can relate to that powerful emotion of love, whereby love, whereby we are receiving and giving to another human being, to an animal, to a place, any one of those things, shall we say, that isn't saying that you are releasing your life existence.
No.
And becoming beyond that consciously beyond that. So I think it's a good experience to relate to, but knowing that it will, you could, if you have suddenly have the experience, you'll find it's beyond that. If you want to work towards this experience so that you have it sometime in the future, then relating to love helps you on your way.
Well, so you can use it as a reference point, certainly. Yeah.
Point of reference, yes, I agree. Excuse me. Excuse me. That's correct, that's right. So this is the whole point of this particular insight.
Yeah.
The message of the mystics is to say, well, remember what they were saying, and if you hadn't had that experience yourself through something dramatic happening, or sometimes some people have it just like falling off a log for no reason at all. They suddenly have this complete connection with the cosmos.
Or you have instances where people have brain injuries and it completely shifts their consciousness.
Yes. Yes. You know, so. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they can have this. If it is said though, also, if it hasn't happened through
haphazardly.
That's the word. That's what I was aiming at. If it hasn't happened like that, then as some people do, they can recruit themselves onto a system like Buddhism, like Sufism, like yoga or the martial arts. The martial arts can also take you along that route and begin to do the practices. You can work towards it. You can absolutely work towards it.
But we were talking about this before doing this recording. The thing about the sort of paradoxical thing about the so-called mystical experience is, it's not something that you can just, you know, draw up and, you know, wish it would just happen. You know, it will happen spontaneously. And, you know, it's just as likely to happen, I think, sometimes in someone who isn't necessarily involved in lots of spiritual practices as it is, you know, in someone who isn't. Do you know?
Yes, absolutely. But
that's the mystery of life for me, you know.
And I think what you're saying is, which is the interesting bit, is that You can aim towards it as your target, but you never know when it's going to happen.
No.
So you can't intellectualize it.
No.
You can aim towards it, and at any moment you can suddenly find it happen.
Mm.
Or, you know, it might take a long time and it might be sudden, but it is a profound, powerful experience.
Mm.
If you are working towards it, it is necessary to be aware of, believe it or not, it's very true. You need to be very conscious of the food that you eat.
Mm.
Number one, it's saying that you need to take more and more energy from...
So high energy foods,
high
organic
energy foods,
food.
But also there's a way of eating it. There's, you know, like we say, like in quantum physics, where you put your attention, so you affect.
Mm.
And so it is suggested that every time you have food in front of you, you put good energy into it. So mm. you could, like a prayer.
Mm.
And some people put their hands over, healers mm. put their hands over to give it more energy, and that's supposed to affect its atom mm. particles.
On an everyday level, we can say that it could be something as simple as making sure that, you know, if you're part of a family, you all eat together and you don't eat in front of the TV, so your focus is on the food, or you don't have a newspaper.
Yeah.
That all affects the how we imbibe the nutrients when we eat the food.
When we take in the nutrition, as you're saying, when we
mm.
take in the nutrition,
mm.
the way you bring concentration to the food, because as per quantum physics, like I keep saying,
yeah.
we affect the atom particles within the food. If, like you say, that we're taking absolutely no honouring and no attention to the food, we're just waffling it down for the sake of comforting the stomach,
or the stomach. You know that thing about seeing food as fuel, and we all dip into that.
Yes.
We live busy lives.
Yes. Satiation, say the word for me.
Satiation.
Satiation of the need to eat
mm.
doesn't actually give that type of energy to your food.
No. So you'll get minimal nutrients from what you eat.
Like, yeah. You know, I just need to put some energy in,
yeah.
and just waffling it down doesn't. It's concentration on the food and appreciation of the food makes mm. a huge difference. But it is advocated in this book, and there's quite a lot of information on it, and I think that is in the fifth insight,
mm.
about eating,
mm.
slowly eating
consciously.
The food. Eating consciously and eating slowly and chewing more so the food than you normally would, and bringing that concentration to it. So that seems to be very important from the teachings, mm. and I think it's worth giving it a go.
But it's also good... you know, good scientific evidence behind what we're talking about in terms of, you know, health and nutrition. If
mm.
you know, properly digest your food,
mm.
and, you know, there's lots of, you know, even mainstream science would agree that you can
I
get
think
them.
So.
They wouldn't talk
yeah.
about the mystical experience, but we know that eating in that way might lead to...
Yeah, we'll do that for them.
We'll do that for
yeah.
them, yeah.
Yes, so, and there seems to be some sort of importance here, so mm. it's worth taking notice of, I think. But it's also the food that you eat mm. as well, the type
the
of food
quality,
you eat.
Actual quality, like I said before, organic.
How it's grown, how it's produced.
How it's stored, and as we know,
yeah.
a lot of our food in the supermarket is, you know, doesn't have a high nutritional level, because certainly here in the UK, a lot of our fruit and veg comes from Europe and further afield. We grow,
and
sadly.
It's not fully developed.
It's not fully developed.
No.
And a lot of, say, our apples, when they come from mm. as far away as New Zealand, they've been irradiated
yes,
for the
yeah.
journey. And so
yeah.
there's very little
yeah.
nutrients.
Yeah. And I think that the Celestine Prophecies, when it emphasises this style of life
mm.
as making a difference towards going to a higher vibration
mm.
and then working towards having this... a wonderful experience, this ecstatic experience, they are suggesting that this is quite important, because mm. you can't get that raise of energy unless
no.
you take notice of these things. So, I mean, I'm not going to advocate for 1 minute that everybody should do it this way, but I'm actually just suggesting read the book and then maybe give it a try and see what you think and mm. see what happens to you. It's
sure.
quite important.
Thank you for that.
I will bring about that there is an overall picture here that comes into the fifth insight, that is very much a scientific view, an overview, that I'm going to try to bring in a simple way because I'm not scientific minded. If you want to throw some of the science in,
sure.
Please do. Please back me up on that. If you've got some in your head, throw it in, because it's, being shamanic, it's not my area as such.
Sure.
But what it's trying to say, that this whole stage of evolution that we're going through at the moment started way, way back before our galaxy formed.
Okay, so before even solid matter was formed.
Before solid matter, it's believed that the universe was not solid matter once upon a time.
No.
And little by little, the various areas of molecules and atoms, whatever you want to call it, started to coalesce together with their movement.
Yeah.
And as they coalesced together, the various chemical elements were gradually formed, and then formed and reformed, and little by little stars were formed, shall I say. I'm actually racing through this. Stars were formed, which created eventually, I'm going to jump to the carbon, and then our planet was formed, many, many trillions of years along. And with on and that planet, then oxygen came about, shall we say. And then from that, we had creatures grow. And there were certain creatures that ate on, and they were in water, inorganic food, inorganic nutrients. But they became food, I think, for organic needing creatures. Then they came out onto the planet, onto the land, because oxygen was formed, etc. And so we had then two different types of developments developed. One's plants, one's animals, or the other one's animals. And this is what has been, all the way through this process, there has been, coming from very, very low vibration, which was hydrogen right at the beginning, going through all the processes, through all of the elements, building up onto a higher and higher vibration.
Yeah.
And we now, as human beings,
so we're part of that process.
Are part of that process, which is ongoing. It's not about that we're just leaping to a high vibration and isn't this special for human beings.
It's not a light switch moment. It's going to take many, many, many years.
Fantastic description. Thank you. This is an ongoing process. It's going somewhere, and it's going on somewhere that it has to go on. It's an evolution for this whole solar system, really, for this planet in the whole solar system, probably for all that's going on around that as well. And we are, it seems, quite an important part of that change that's going on at the moment.
It can be hard, I feel, to have a concept of that, because when they show images of the planet Earth, the classic globe, shape, and you almost see human beings as little ants on this planet. And it's hard for us to have this concept that we are all part of this amazing process.
We are part. And I'm sure it's human intellect arrogance to say that we're an important part of it. But I think you'll find the mammals, and I'm not saying just the human beings, I'm saying the mammals, I believe, are really stepping up this process of going on, going on further. And I think as we take this vibration, if we take responsibility to enable this vibration to become higher and higher, we are the evolving bit, like the planets were the evolving bit, and then the plants were the evolving bit before. We humans, mammals, are the evolving bit, and it's going on to a higher vibration.
Sure.
One can speculate what that is.
I mean, just related to what I was saying before about, how it can, it's hard for us to have this concept of how, as individual humans, we're part of this evolutionary process. It makes me think of, I'm not sure who said it, I think it was a philosopher, who said, on the one hand, we're like worms in the earth, but we're also gods as well as human beings. I'm not sure if it was someone like William Blake.
Yeah.
But that is the paradox, isn't it?
Yes.
The great paradox. Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah, are we the worms or are we the gods? Well, you know, I think we're part of the evolving process of what was worms and what is gods.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I think you're right there too. That's the interesting process that we're on.
Mm.
So that's what it's trying to say, that there is a process that started even before there was anything
even
solid
there
in this universe.
Even before human consciousness exists.
Totally before human consciousness. Mm. I'd quite like to know where human consciousness work fits into this, but I don't know at this point. Mm. I won't go there at this point. and so it's ongoing. But there's a point now where we need to take responsibility to enable this process.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just a fanciful, it can appear like a fanciful abstract thing. And you think, well, so what you're talking about is, How do we take responsibility for our role in that evolution? Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yes. Mm. Now, it is suggested
yeah.
that we do take our awareness back to us as individuals, our own selves.
Mm.
And if we, our own selves, take responsibility for our own single process rather than try and fix the world.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of well-meaning people want to get out there and fix the world, but how can you fix the world until you've dealt with you?
Mm.
The thing is, if you've gone through these changes that you need to improve upon who, what you are, your expression, your vibrational output, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
if you've taken, then if everybody takes responsibility from
everything
their own,
everything shifts forward.
Everything goes. Mm. And if you don't take responsibility for yours but try to fix the world, you'll find that you soon crumble.
Mm.
And so it's definitely suggested that you take on the responsibility of working towards having this euphoric experience by doing what needs to be done to do it.
Mm.
And it also suggests that there is absolutely nothing wrong with feeling good about that and making it happen for you.
Mm.
So at the same time, we're talking about a collective experience and enabling a whole collective of experience of people, of beings, of humans, or mammals taking everything going forward. They're saying, just focus on yourself.
Okay, so are you alluding to the fact that quite often, I know this has been leveled at me in the past by people, well, you say you're on this spiritual journey, Anthony, you know, and in the past I've been in different organisations, different spiritual groups, as a lot of us have been, like yourself and a lot of our listeners,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
You can have the accusation levelled against you that you're almost up your own backside, you're self-absorbed. But what we're actually, I think what you're alluding to is actually, no, working on yourself is quite a selfless thing because it's leading towards, you know, the betterment or the evolution of society as a whole and human consciousness. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, because if nobody took care of themselves and dealt with themselves and concentrated on their need to evolve, their need to sort out what blocks that evolution within them, then it doesn't happen, does it, at all.
Mm.
The thing about this taking care of going through the stages and aiming toward this heightened experience, this very powerfully heightened experience, it does start off, it does give you a sense when your experience is of excitement. It starts off with a sense of excitement inside of you.
Mm.
It then goes to euphoria, where it really lifts you and you start to feel connected with everything.
Mm.
And then this amazing feeling of peace and love.
Mm.
And it's not being in love.
It's just sex, isn't it?
He's single, folks. Does that explain it all, doesn't it?
Male?
He needs a girlfriend. Put an advert out there for you. typical male to think immediately that if it's love, it's to do with sex.
I was thinking the euphoria afterwards. We didn't talk about
no,
the guilt.
No, that's smoking a cigarette,
oh,
I'm
right,
told.
Okay, yeah.
I don't smoke, so I don't know. So it is this feeling of just feeling beautifully connected with everything rather than in loveness or needing to take love from anybody or be pass it to anybody. It just is. And so that can look pretty, what I want for me is this wonderful experience and that's all that matters. But it is very important to have that enjoyable experience, aim towards that enjoyable experience, because that radiates beyond you and it can have an effect beyond you. But everybody needs to do it for themselves because you can't do it for anybody else. People have to do it for themselves.
I'm quite a cynical person. So on behalf of our more cynical listeners, I can say what you're talking about sounds, you know, great. This mystical experience, you know, expansion of awareness, connection to God, the source, whatever.
The goddess.
Sounds kind of fluffy and woo-woo.
Creation, creator.
How do individuals actually go about achieving that? Does this allude to the next insight? Does this connect to the sixth insight in any way?
Going about doing it. I see where you're coming from. Okay, I've got you. How you go about it is what we were talking about was looking for how you can absorb, it's having energy.
From the food.
Energy. So it's how you do not do the control dramas where you're doing battle with somebody else, or the control dramas, shall I say, the struggle for energy, where you're not trying to absorb energy for somebody else.
So in that way, you're not wasting energy.
Like in number six, it's about the control dramas, but it's not about, it's actually how you fill up with energy from, shall we say, meditation, so that you become more peaceful, how you get the energy from food.
Because, of course, the mind, an uncontrolled mind, wastes a lot of energy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I can speak on that one.
Yeah, I know quite a few people that do that, done it tons of times myself. Yeah. It's saying that... that if you can, for instance, if you can go to places of energy, if you can go into nature or go up on a hill or on a mountain or go near trees, you can start filling up with energy. So when you're taking care of the food that you're eating, what type of food, how you're eating it, etc. And you can also go to places of energy, places of energy like those places. I'm just going to give a little suggestion, which it gives in the book, is to, if you can connect with an experience of love of some sort, really feeling warm and loving and like fuzzy something.
Love for a pet.
A pet, a child, a baby, a partner, or
love for your craft or art.
Parents. Yes, but a real feeling of love. If you can go to a place in nature and fill up with that memory of that feeling, and then if you can have a sense of opening, I know that's a cliche, but I think we all get that. But even if you've not had that feeling of opening, to practice sitting and just feeling, right, I'm opening up somehow, and then you will find that you will affect the nature around you with your energy, and in turn their energy will feed back to you, and then you can begin to fill up,
like a positive feedback.
So there's a necessity to fill up with energy without taking it from somebody else. Okay, because that's what we tend to do. We tend to vie with ourselves psychologically with people and interaction. But that's an energy exchange that actually is like, I want energy subconsciously.
I would suggest that that's like a norm within society, which is anything but a norm, but that will change. I mean, that's normal. It's normal conversation, isn't it?
Yes, it is, like we call normal. But we don't realise that we're doing psychological
damage.
Well, I can say battle, but that's being a bit contentious, really. But we do this gameplay, definitely. And I think what you're alluding to is like the control dramas. that to be, in order to aim in the direction of going, of having this mystical experience, connecting with all, the other things you have to take notice of is the, which is number, the insight of number six.
Right.
And I think that's what you may, so what maybe.
Is, so the sixth insight, I believe, is called clearing the past. Is that correct?
It's so, called clearing the past,
one,
yes.
So one way we can clear the past, am I right in thinking, is you were talking about control dramas as having an awareness of the role that we play in control dramas.
Yes.
And obviously to try and heal that. And a lot of that, I believe, comes down to having an awareness of how we were brought up or our role within the family. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I'm going to just give a short sentence here. It says, which is using a repetitive childhood pattern of control.
Mm.
And of course, this is, we're not fully conscious of it. And the point is to become conscious of the type of psychological play you have in interaction with somebody else and other people.
Mm.
And when you become conscious of it, then you own it, you see it, you, so it's identifying, owning, seeing it, and then learning how to change it.
Mm.
Then, because if you go towards a mystical experience, what will block you or send you back again to a lower vibration energy within you is the interplay of one of these habits of behaviour.
Okay. So is the importance, am I right in thinking, the importance of the family element is that the role that we developed as young children within a family will then often unconsciously pattern as adults with in our interactions with people in relationships and all things like that. Is that correct?
I'm going to just read this bit, which will sum that up, if that's
excellent.
For you.
Yeah.
Right. When we were children,
mm-hmm.
our parents were the source of survival and security.
Yeah.
We can go with that, can't we?
Yeah, yeah.
So when we needed to draw from that security, we used one of the dramas that seemed to work. So unconsciously, as toddlers, as children, as adolescents, all the way through those years, we unconsciously needed security and we needed a sense of feeling of survival. And in order to make sure that happened, because that was what we needed to feel whole or safe or okay or vital, secure in any way, then we would try and draw it from our parents. We would try and get that affirmation from our parents. And what we learned is, whatever the characteristics and the gameplay, shall we say, or the psychological approach of our parents, one and the other, we unconsciously learn how to tiptoe, to dance around, to dodge, to play games, or to do whatever we needed to do in order to feel okay.
And in a lot of instances, am I right in thinking this happens because, unfortunately, you know, a lot of us as kids don't get that unconditional love that we need. Is that correct?
Well, that's in some cases, but sometimes it's not as dramatic as that.
No, it can be more subtle.
Literally is a game play. Remember, there's a lot of parents out there are doing a really good job and bringing the needs to the children that they need, but they are still working with their own control drama.
Yeah.
And although that there seems to be no harm on it on the surface, and I'm not saying there is harm on it, the children then learn unconsciously how to work amongst this to enable to feel good, safe, secure, steady, okay. So, I mean, you're alluding to there being bad parental, and I'm alluding to, it's not about always about bad parental.
No.
It's literally
just the dynamics.
The dynamics and the play. But children will also always try to enable themselves to feel okay, feel safe, feel warm, feel needed, feel wanted. They will swim around everything to enable that to happen and develop parts of themselves. This is called the control dramas. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And
so am I right in thinking that, you know, as individuals, we take on a different role or a different characteristic within the control drama?
Well, within a social setting, whether it be family or anything, yes, we actually take on a stance, a projection, a psychology that enables oneself to feel okay. I'm going to give you, it's understood from the book, from the teachings of the insights, that there are four basic characteristics.
Okay, it'd be great to learn about those.
For all human beings, for all human beings. I'm just going to read them out to you. One is called the intimidator.
Yeah.
And one is called the interrogator.
Right.
And those two are known as the more aggressive characteristics. But, you know, I mean aggressive, but it's not necessarily that they're hardline aggressive.
They could still be done subtle, quite subtly.
Subtle, yeah. And part of the human character of a person. Yes. The other one is the aloof. Number three is the aloof. And number four is the poor me. And I think a lot of us know about poor me one. Mm. And they're known as the passive characteristics. Mm. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Right, okay. I'm going to try to give you a precede view, a shorter view of each one of these.
Okay.
But there's a lot of detail of it in the book, so I do suggest listeners are interested, go to the book again and read the book. I'm just going to read out what I've written here the best I can, and I hope it makes sense to our listeners and it's useful. Right, so if I say the intimidator... If you have a belief of scarcity
can be scary. You've invented a new word.
Scarily scarcity, I think. Yeah, okay. I'm good at that. You will perceive a need for competition.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if you come across somebody where you feel that... In order for you to feel good, that you have to prove that you are better than the other person, then you feel that you've gained what you needed because there wasn't enough to go around, and you've won.
So in that way, is that how that person would be almost taking the energy, say, of
and
the
they
other
are literally on an unknown level, actually absorbing energy. The other person can feel tired.
That's why, we'd often say with people like that, we feel wiped after.
We feel wiped. Yeah. That's the perfect way to explain it. Yes, absolutely. And this truly does happen, but we don't notice this energy exchange that happens. Then we've got, shall we say, the poor me. The poor me says, if feeling like a victim of their actions, your reactions might be to try to justify your powerlessness rather than take responsibility for your own life.
Mm-hmm.
You never feel that you have enough power to confront the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, all right, don't look at me like that. I know that one quite well.
I think most of our listeners and myself, being human beings, can relate to that one because it's so easy to dip into it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Okay, well, I'll come back to that in a minute. I'll go now to the interrogator.
Mm.
The interrogator uses psychology and mind games. It's not physical. It's much less a physical thing. Mm. It's more psychological, shall we say.
Mm.
Whereas the intimidator will be browbeating, competing.
Yeah.
Competing. The interrogator. It uses more psychology.
Mm.
Less a physical. Yes. Break down the interrogator. Their purpose is to start to break down the confidence, and it says here the spirit, but you say like the confidence of the other person,
mm-hmm.
as in sarcasm, being sceptical, needling, like being a perfectionist, a self-righteous. They engage others in their facts, their logic, their wit, and their intellect. Children will want to escape their interrogation, often becoming an aloof or a poor me.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Now the aloof. caught up in their own internal world of unresolved struggles, fears, and self-doubts. They believe unconsciously that if they appear distant or mysterious enough, someone will draw them out. They are often lonely. They prefer to keep some sort of distance for fear of others imposing their will or questioning on their decisions. As children, they were not able to establish or satisfy their needs for independence. Mm. So I think that if people, if the listeners think about it, they will get an awareness
of which category they might
of. Yeah, it's very well, it's very easy to look at friends and family and start to identify the characteristics and the game plays from them. It's ever so hard to see your own.
Is it also true, Heather, that you know, the role that we take on board will differ in terms of who we're speaking to? You know, so we might have a certain dynamic with one parent. We might have a different dynamic with a sibling.
Yes.
So we're adopt a different position.
But if the sibling is so powerful that they take your energy with it, like you can have an older sibling maybe that it does then vie with your energy in some way, then yes, it will affect you. But perhaps also different from parent to parent.
Yeah.
So it will create a mixture in each person. Mm. You will have a mixture, but you will. But it is stated in the book, but almost without doubt, one of these characteristics will predominate within you.
That was the word which just come in, predominance. Yeah, yes. That was the word that would spring to my mind, yeah.
Yes, there is a predominance.
Or one that will sort of default to, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah. And now I've seen like a person that has a combination of intimidator and interrogator.
Mm.
Very subtle, though. It's not obvious until you start really looking at the signs.
Mm.
But I've seen a combination. But if I stop and think about it, I realise that really they are predominantly one or the other, with the other one with a close second backing it up.
Sure.
So that's where they've picked it up from, reacting like with one parent and then reacting with another parent, shall I say. Poor me and aloof tend to stick together quite a lot as well, because poor me and aloof have often been created from the same source.
Yeah.
And so you can see somebody that can be aloof, but also lean to poor me, or poor me and then lean to aloof in their reactions to things that are happening. But I will say to you that I am definitely, predominantly one of these characteristics, and the other three coming up behind quite close.
I couldn't possibly say which one. I want us to continue working together. So I'll keep...
Do you see one of these that you am predominantly?
I do, but...
Do you see yourself reacting with any of the others in any situations?
Yeah.
Have you seen yourself being an intimidator in a situation with a person at any time?
That tends to be when I feel that someone is... kind of reacting negatively towards me, I would tend to
You go, so you have a bit of that and a bit of interrogator.
Yeah.
Have you sort of questioned anybody and questioned them and said, well, why would you do that? That's not the right way to do it.
I don't tend to be. No.
Right, so you don't have a great deal of that. That's this little bit way in the background for you.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I'm not going in the rest, because we're not going to reveal
going to
all about
things,
you.
No.
Really, but this for me was a demonstration to show people like the different types. But yes, I've literally seen me in all of those in different situations, but totally recognise I have a big trouble with one of them. So I think if people start to look at it more and more, they'll begin to recognise.
So how do, so if our listeners, you know, are thinking, oh gosh, yeah, I'm aware of in this interaction with someone, how I tend to adopt that role. How do our listeners... you know, begin to maybe reach a more balanced position in their interactions with people? Are we talking here about, you know, where they have to heal emotional and psychological baggage in order to have an awareness of the roles that they play? I mean,
Well, I'm going to say that being a shamanic practitioner and a counsellor and, you know, the life coaching, etc.
Mentoring.
Well, all of this.
All of the above.
Oh, I think we're promoting now. I don't mean to promote. But what I'm saying is that I know that we all need, I've been through it all myself, we all need to go through various layers of baggage.
Yeah.
You know, past stuff. And people have brought in from previous lifetimes to fix certain layers of baggage, as well as what's turned up at this time in this lifetime, to work through stuff. It's part of their journey to go through. So sometimes there's many areas, from my point of view, to go to heal different things that that need to be healed. So I think it's, it can be done on much more expanded or deeper levels than given here in the Celestine Prophecies in these chapters. So just to be aware
it's
that I'm
almost
aware
like you can take it as deep as you want to, really, kind
or
of,
need
or need
or
to,
need yeah. or recognize that you need. But when we're looking at these three main characteristics that we develop as we grow up, one of them, several of them, or whatever, then if you find yourself, for instance, an interrogator, if you're primarily an interrogator and you find that, it is suggested then that you go into a profession or a part-time occupation where you could be a journalist, you could be a teacher, do you see what I mean? Where you again, if we look at the area of poor me, poor me would make, in a positive way, a very good healer, as long as they learn how to turn it to a productive, positive thing.
Or an
thing.
Empath, of course. Yeah.
An empath, a healer, that type of a thing. A supporter in charities. Do you see what I mean? So you look at what the counterbalance is. And I will say, it goes into more detail in the book again. I know I keep referring to that, but these two, the fifth and the sixth insight, are very extensive.
They're very dense, aren't they?
In their teachings and their information that come into them.
So it's hard to draw out the essence of them, really, isn't it?
We can't nutshell it at all with this. So I can just give an insight. I can just give a little throw-in of all of these things. Please look at it. It's more detailed. It's more. Of the interrogator, the intimidator, the poor me and the aloof, this is no criticism to anybody at all. It's part of human evolution to learn about themselves and evolve beyond. But we have to take responsibility for it. So, for instance, this is one of the things to become aware of, so that you can aim towards this amazing...
Raising your energies.
Amazing experience where you're beginning to have the experience where you suddenly realise that you're outside of life, you're outside of the small being, and that you are part of the universe, so that when you lose that amazing experience before and come back into your fears, because you will lose it the minute you get back into your baggage. And you'll get back into your baggage because it's the habit, because you haven't actually cleared it yet and reformed it. And
what springs to my mind, this theory I have, is that why children are so wonderful, and we like being around children, they have such amazing energy and they're in the moment, is and they're so alive to life, is, I would suggest, is because certainly before they go to school, they don't have this strong sense of self because the ego hasn't solidified. So what I would think is, you know, as we become adults and we take on board all these responsibilities and the ways in which we've been conditioned, you know, that means we're less likely to connect to the higher energies, if you will. And that's, you know, as I say, children are naturally connecting to the world, aren't they?
Well, yes, but it's partly also because their whole metabolism is fresh, fresh and vital, very, very vital. So they have expanded auras because of that. As their chakras open up, because they are closed when they're babies, their chakras are closed, and they begin to open up as they go through certain experience. I think you, it's something like, I think that you come into this world with three to a three open, and then right. the rest open over periods of time. Mm. And when they open up, they're just oozing mm. divine energy. Mm. They're just oozing it. And remember, their bodies are working so well for them, mm. so well for them, that their auras are just full of rainbow vibration colours, and they're huge. Mm. So one of the things why we feel so good with them is because we're mm. absorbing that. Mm. And you see, they don't have any limitations. Mm. So it's just pouring through them all the time, and it's coming out of them
all
the time.
You think of the energy of a
little... And that is pure love.
The energy of, you know, a newborn baby, where we love cuddling and holding. It's just so pure, isn't it? And...
Yeah, but we do get good energy from mm. them. And I did want to say, add to that, because I've just understood that that is a vital awareness, is the sort of love that children have isn't sentimental.
No.
It isn't... It
it's
isn't
not contrived.
Dependency.
It's not contrived.
There's no dependency. Mm. And it reminds me of a story somebody told me once, that another lady doing the training at the shamanic centre, as myself at 1 year, she said she delighted in giving her young niece, I think it was, her mm-hmm. young niece, who was about 3 years old, mm-hmm. 3 years old, 4 years old, she said she delighted in giving this, her niece, for Christmas present, a little collection of crystals, beautiful, energized crystals. And she said she was delighted that her niece was thrilled to see them, because after all of these toys that she had, this was something so different. And mm. they were shiny and alive. And she obviously the child really felt the energy from them, because mm. she was very sensitive to them. And she was down on the carpet with them, and she was, you know, squealing with delight. And they were delightful, and they were gorgeous and everything. Then somebody said from the kitchen, mm. one of the parents said from the kitchen, "Oh, could you come in? Do you want to come and get your something, chocolate or something or other?" So the kid jumped up immediately, went, "Oh, yes," and just ran over the crystals and off into the kitchen. And, of course, the woman... The auntie was there going, "Oh my goodness, how could you run over them?" But she suddenly looked at them and she went, "Well, of course, that is what's pure." Mm. She absolutely adored them, mm. but she's not making them, precious,
not coveting them,
precious, yeah, precious. Sure. They were just part of the universe, and mm. she just
in
walked
that
out. She
yes.
just ran across them, mm. no problem. Left them behind, forgot all about them for the rest of the day.
I think we
and
can
she
learn
suddenly
a lot from
saw
that.
The purity of that. Mm. And that, for me, I've never forgotten that story, because it's like pure love. Mm. And I think that that's what we're needing for to join the universe, because mm. of course these children are at that point, they're still part of the universe.
Absolutely.
And of course, as you said, as the years go on, we go down and down and down in our vibration.
Yeah, denser, denser.
But I will add, and this is coming from me, that I believe that we've come to have difficult experiences to learn from and move forward from.
Of course.
We've come to learn that. So I think that the journey is to go downwards, lower and lower in our vibration, to learn how to come back out. Mm. I think that's what we've done. Because by the time we've come back out, we've evolved
sure.
to the next stage.
Sure.
So I don't see that, as some people would say,
as
a problem.
No.
I think it's part of the journey. Mm. And I will say that this is where I come in as well, with the practice that I do, is because when people have got to the point where they're learning about themselves, and they need to come out of it, there's like a threshold, mm. and they get stuck at the threshold. It's like keep bumping up against the threshold of change. Mm. Mm. And that's when they find somebody like me can be helpful to them. It's right, okay, let's see where you are, let's see where you're going, let's take you past the threshold, mm. so that they can start on the next stage of their journey. Move to that higher vibration, yeah. begin to move back to the higher vibration again in stages.
That's very, very nicely put. So I think, mm. If it's okay with you, Heather, we'll begin to round things up now.
Yes.
So it's been
yes.
An interesting discussion on the fifth and sixth insight. And as we said at the beginning, it's been quite difficult, really, hasn't it? Because there's so There's so much contained within those two insights, and it's difficult to praise the nutshell for the purposes of a podcast. So we would would point our listeners in the direction of all the wonderful books, not only the novel, The Celestine Prophecy, and all the teaching guides as well, if you want further explanation. And of course, we have this wonderful thing called the internet, which no doubt there'll be plenty of information on the Celestine on there. Mm. But having said that, we hope you have enjoyed our attempt to synthesize the main elements of the fifth and sixth. Would you?
That's brilliant. That's well said. Thank you. Yes, thank you for your help through that as well, because I did feel that was something of a struggle, and so I hope it wasn't muddly or confusing to people listening. Mm. But even if it is, still go to the books.
Yes.
Go to the books.
Yes.
I have no vested interest in commissions or any type of thing on the books.
Neither of us do.
Literally, it's just that we think very highly of the teachings. Mm. And we just feel them, if we can just put things in a nutshell to pique people's interest to go to the book and learn from it.
Mm.
When I know that the first two books were stories. There's a story created round the insights.
Mm.
And I do believe that there are some people where it put them off because they only saw it as a storybook.
Mm.
I would urge them to go through it and understand the teachings.
Mm.
It's worth it because, in fact, there's more beyond the first two storybooks.
Or they might have done what I did, which was I've never been into novels and stories, always read factual books. I'd speed through that. When it came to the teaching, highlight a pen, highlight. If you look at my very crumpled edition of the Celestine Prophecy, you can tell the inside parts because that's all the highlights.
I think there's many a book of mine that is underlined in pencil before I actually got confidence to underline them in pen.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always see that books like that are well-loved books.
Mm. It's almost, when you do it in pencil, it doesn't feel quite so sacrilegious.
No, then, it doesn't.
And then you think, sod it, it's just a book.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Although it's not just a book when you love it that much. Absolutely. When you love it, and what you're doing is appreciating the author a great deal.
Absolutely.
And the knowledge that's come through.
Mm.
We're old school, we love books.
Mm, right, so thank you all for tuning in and listening to our exploration of the fifth and sixth insight. So the next episode in this serialization of the Celestine Prophecy will obviously be the 7th and the 8th.
And the 8th.
So I look forward to working with you again, Heather, on the 7th and 8th.
Just to say quickly to anybody listening, the 7th is engaging the flow.
Right.
Remembering to stop as often as necessary to reconnect your energy.
Right.
That's the energy we're talking about, and raising your energy.
Sure.
The 8th is the interpersonal ethic, a way of treating other people so more messages are shared.
Right.
So that's more synchronistic messages, so it takes you on your journey further on the path that you may need to be on.
Thank you for that. And just to remind our listeners, you can connect with us at Discerning Consciousness on our Facebook page. We welcome any contribution, good, bad and indifferent. So please head over to Discerning Consciousness at Facebook. So we look forward to your input and look forward to listening again next time. Thank you all very much. Signing off now. Goodbye.